Our next speaker is Joe Barge, which is not, as I said, a doctor.
Not an academic, nor a historian.
He's a relative.
Probably known as Bill of Bollocks, you know.
Anyway, but I say that the history of this place is all of our history. And of course it's part of the Protestant working class history, and the Protestant working class are part of that history. Now if I go back even a bit further in history, the glorious revolution of 1688 and 1690 is an important part of all of our history. And so is the struggle of the United Irishmen in 1798, when they went under the slogan of Protestant, Catholic, and Dissenter United. The strange, the orange song which demands that Croppies lie down is not referring to the Jacobites or the Stuarts dynasty or Papists of 1690. It's referring to the United Irishmen of Antrim, Donegore, Belfast, Sinn Féin, and Ballinahinch. So it appears to me that history has kind of played a three-card trick on the people here. And it leaves me with questions. Was the formation of the Orange Order in 1795 or 96 a celebratory response to the Glorious Revolution, or was it a reactionary response to the politics of that time? I think we need to think about that, and that's not recent history. Reformationist history, the Age of Enlightenment, is all recognised in countries in Europe and shared by all as part of a progressive history. So we have to ask ourselves the question, what's happened to us? Why are we not all united celebrating this progressive history? Why are we left with this in-your-face Eugens and Nemans type of politics? All of this is encapsulated in what we are faced with today, and now people are telling me on the media what Britishness is and what we have to defend in terms of Britishness. And I take that, I get amused about it and I get offended by it sometimes, because I consider my life as part of British history. I consider the struggle of the labour movement as part of British history. And I ask the question, is the history and the struggle of the British people and the British working class not part of the history of the Protestant working class in Northern Ireland? What about the peasant uprising in 1381? You know, remember the wee poem about the law doth punish man or woman who steals the goose from off the common? That's a greater felon loose who steals the common from the goose. I mean, what about the leaveners? Who said the poorest he has the right to live as the greatest he? The Chartists, who lobbied and petitioned for universal suffrage and for the end of property qualification, which we were still struggling with in 1970. And what about the massacres in Peterloo, Manchester, 1819, or the suffragette struggle for women's emancipation? Or the history of the labour movement and its early beginnings in the late 1700s, the combinations, outlawed organisations, secret societies, whose strikes were often accompanied by violence, the burning of small factories and machinery, etc. Or the Tulkeburg martyrs in 1834, who were transported to Australia, six of them, because they dared to combine against their employers. Is all this not part of Protestant working class history? The development of the co-op movement, independent labour clubs, independent labour parties, and the development of the Labour Party, both parliamentary and extra-parliamentary, which led to the creation of the welfare state. Is that not part of our British history? And the National Health Service, is that not the most important part of our great history? Is it not more important than the Union flag? Why are we not mobilizing people around the defense of the National Health Service with the same type of determination? It is much more important, I can tell you, than the Union flag. The history of the British people and the British Labour movement is also filled with antipathy towards the British ruling classes, including monarchy, an antipathy towards their empire, an empire of the ruling classes, which treated the British people very badly indeed. Of course, among the people, there were always those who were impressed by the empire. Was it Gusty Spence who told the story of the Shankill roadman who was consoled by his very poor living conditions by the fact that we owned India? So what is Britishness? I'm being told all the time what Britishness is. Is it a yearning for the glories of the worldwide civilization of the empire? Or is it the defence and promotion of the civilization built by the struggle of working people at home, which I include the welfare state and the National Health Service as its most recent developments, which are now under such dire threat? Perhaps these things are compatible, of course, and maybe I'm on the wrong track, but it seems to me that there are identities now which we didn't have before, and that's the result of the catastrophic history of the last 3 or 4 decades. We've got PUL and our sheet and our sheets. You know, I remember when loyalism and unionism was a synonymous thing. I mean, I think it has emerged in our recent conflict as a badge of working classism. Loyalism is working class, and I think there's some truth in that. I mean, I think that the loyalism are those who are in the orbit, the broad political orbit of unionist paramilitaries. And I use the phrase unionist paramilitaries deliberately, because how, if we start from the beginning, I think, of that period that I've just touched on. I mean, where did unionist paramilitaries come from? I mean, I'm not a historian, of course, and everything I say is subject to correction. And I'm in a room full of academics, so no doubt that will happen today, and others. But anyway, I mean, it seems to me that it begins with the T.K. Whitaker report, believe it or not, a civil servant in Dublin, who announced that they were going to remove all the trade wars and trade barriers that they had with Britain, and started a fundamentally new relationship between Britain and the Irish Republic. Fundamental change. And then there emerged Captain Terence O'Neill. He was there before that, I think, but he emerged as a champion of a requirement for a new era, a different relationship. And we have to ask ourselves, how did Captain Terence O'Neill reach that conclusion? I mean, short questions have to be asked. Who set up the UVF? Who set up the UVF that Gusty Spence joined? Section or a group or a faction, I'm not sure. Tony Novoselle refers to it in his book of the what I call the Official Unionist Party. My memory tells me it used to be called the Official Unionist Party. As it turned out, it was a section or a faction or a group which was very, very influential, because they succeeded in getting rid of Captain Terence O'Neill and party with allies outside of that party. And they got rid of Brent Faulkner as well. So they were quite an influential group, and Gusty Spence reached what appears to be a kind of a road to Damascus conclusion, I would define it as, where he found himself and other working class lads in the poke, banged up, so to speak, and the people, the middle and upper class people who were, if you like, still at it, were free and still creating politics that was causing other working class lads to go into jail. This is the way I read it. Others are closer to it and will correct my interpretation and I think quite reasonably possibly come to the conclusion there's something that way. We're in here, they're out there still mixing it, and our lads are still coming in into jail. So that's the way I read the thing. So Busty, I think, appears to have been the forerunner of an attempt, a progressive attempt, to present something in the interest of him and his colleagues, working class people from Shackle and elsewhere. And as I read the history of that, he was joined by Billy Mitchell, who's done a lot of writing, David Irvine, Billy Hutchinson himself, who told me one time, and he's here now, so he's really in a position to contradict me, I think, that he aspired, if you like, to recreate or to create what was the Northern Ireland Labour Party, the PUP, should become, and they adopted the clause 4 of the British Labour Party, which was taken out by that great hero of ours, Tony Blair, and threw in the bin. The PUP picked it up, and so we have clause 4 in the PUP.
Still there, isn't it?
Yes, well, there you are. Well, you see, so. So the objective was building a similar part of the NILP, and it's already been referred to the NILP. Too much, too late. Okay, I might leave it there actually. I've got a lot more to say on these matters, but I'm going to say a lot more in two minutes. I'll come to a kind of a question which is in my head, and that is, let's take Jonathan Powell. Jonathan Powell recently said that, I'm paraphrasing him now, I'm going to get him wrong, but he said that the SDLP are running off the Catholic middle class, Sinn Féin are running off the Catholic working class, the DUP and the UUP are running off the Protestant middle class, but there's nobody running off the Protestant working class. That was Jonathan Powell. Now that's the fellow who brought peace to us, by the way. And gets out of the age of bringing peace to us and defines us in history, puts us all in these little pigeonholes and I'm asking, is that true? I mean, is Sinn Féin running after the Catholic working class? That's not what we get in here. When people come in here looking for trouble, looking for support because they're in trouble with their employer or whatever, on zero hour contract. You know what a 0 hour contract is, I assume? It's a reinstitution of casual labour. Only the automized, that the bottomized, that you sit in the house instead of being a doctor, standing down looking for work and being sent home. You sit in the house and they can leave you sitting there or call you when they like from the house. And those people come from Protestant and Catholic North Belfast, West Belfast, Protestant and Catholic East Belfast, Protestant and Catholic South Belfast. They're all getting screwed. That's the position. That's the position that we're in at the moment. And I'm just asking the question. I mean, is the politics a class issue? Is what's happening in the streets a class issue, or is it a unionist issue? Is it a constitutional issue? Seeing as we're talking about the Protestant working class, these labels, you know, you got the Protestant working class, Catholic working class, Protestant socialism, Catholic socialism.
Red Army Choir.
Just because you look like Stalin. Anyway, I mean, are we trapped? Point is, I mean, what's the difference between Protestant socialism, Catholic socialism, and national socialism, or what between them are we? I mean, are we trapped? Are we trapped? Are we trapped in an all-class alliance? Is a Protestant working class trapped in an all-class alliance? I don't know the answer to that. I know there's genuine people struggling for an alternative than that. But are they trapped in history? Are they trapped in an all-class alliance? Or is there a way out of it? I don't know the answer to that question.
Thank you.